Lightning Network adoption is scaling Bitcoin around the world, and it will be key to protecting our freedoms in the digital age as well.
The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We've got a short read to start out the week. This one is by, it's another one from Bitcoin Magazine, and it's by Paolo Arduino, who we had on the show, actually. He's the CEO of Bitfinex and the CTO of Hole Punch. I can't remember exactly where he's helping to run and fund Hole Punch, and involved with Keat and all of this stuff, and you know, Bitfinex is also involved in Synonym. He's at the center of a lot of the tools that I think are most fascinating, the things that are being built right now that I think are going to be huge later on. And I've been very, very lucky to have gotten to play with a lot of these things already, and I'm super, super excited to see a lot of it come to fruition. So I get to talk about a little bit of that in the guy's take after this, but I want to go ahead and just get into the read and let Paolo kind of set the stage for this discussion. Really quick, I just want to thank our sponsors, who are the amazing crews over at CoinKite, building out some of the most amazing Bitcoin hardware products in this space, literally. They have been making Bitcoin-only hardware and security devices since block 141,000, and they make the open-source cold card, and you've got to check them out. 5% off everything that they have with code BitcoinAudible. And if you're looking to be stacking sats right now, Swan Bitcoin is always the simplest, easiest savings plan, ongoing savings plan. You automatically buy and automatically withdraw. No complicated maintenance, just set it up once and you get your keys and stack all the time. And lastly, Fold. The Fold debit card gets you sats back on everything, literally everything. I use it as my main driver every single day. I can't imagine using fiat again and not getting sats. I would be so sad. Literally, it's the only reason you should use fiat is because somebody pays you sats to do it, because it's awful. Fiat is trash. Get a Fold card and you'll get paid Bitcoin to use fiat. And you can't beat it. Special links, discount codes, all the goodies right there in the description. So check them out. All right, with that, it's time to get into today's read, and it's titled, Widespread Bitcoin Adoption and Digital Freedom Can Only Happen Through Lightning, by Paolo Arduino. Lightning Network adoption is scaling Bitcoin around the world, and it will be key to protecting our freedoms in the digital age as well. Ignore the avalanche, of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD, tumbling down from large sections of the popular press. Bitcoin is here to stay. A recent joint report conducted by Boston Consulting Group, BitGit, and Foresight Ventures forecast that the number of crypto users will hit 1 billion by 2030. The report pointed out that the industry is early in its adoption phase with, quote, plenty of growth to come. Despite clear signs of substantial market growth for years to come, skeptics still question the effectiveness and sustainability of cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin as a widely accepted means of payment. Specifically, the question of scalability has repeatedly come up as a major obstacle to its widespread adoption. Bitcoin's focus on security and decentralization limits the ability to handle high throughputs of transactions within the network in short periods of time. This fact is often highlighted by its critics, suggesting that without the ability to quickly process giant blocks of transaction data, receiving payments for something as small as a cup of coffee will result in fees that exceed the price of the beverage itself. If Bitcoin is going to live up to its full potential and become a means of payment in an alternative financial system, users must be able to execute transactions quickly and at a low cost. This is where the Lightning Network comes into play, and why mass adoption of the network is critical to the success of Bitcoin becoming a true option for everyday payments. The Lightning Network, a second-layer protocol designed to facilitate micropayment channels at scale, brings Bitcoin back to its original purpose as a peer-to-peer payment network by taking transactions off-chain and enabling them to be completed in mere seconds and at a fraction of the cost. According to data from Bitcoin Visuals, the capacity of the Lightning Network has 4,700.623 Bitcoin in liquidity, flowing through the protocol at the time of this writing. It just passed 5,000 at the time of this recording. With the capacity of the Lightning Network steadily increasing over the past year, even in the face of a bear market, this growth in utilization proves that the technology powering these systems is still in its infancy. Bitcoin's real-world adoption is growing. Bitcoin has already seen rapid growth and adoption, even being adopted as legal tender in emerging economies such as El Salvador's and the Central African Republic's. The Lightning Network enables brick-and-mortar shops in these countries to accept Bitcoin as payment for Big Macs or Frappuccinos via mobile devices. And the widespread embrace of small cryptocurrency transactions for daily goods and services hasn't stopped there. Payments apps such as El Salvador's Chivo wallet offer low-cost, high-speed transactions, and Cash App integrated the Lightning Network in February, making zero-fee Bitcoin payments available for its customers. With this widespread adoption, popularity has soared as payment volume on the Lightning Network grew 410% over the past year. Additionally, according to a report from Arcane Research, payments on the Lightning Network were available to over 80 million people in March of this year, compared to only 100,000 people back in August of 2021. As more cryptocurrency exchanges integrate the Lightning Network into their platforms, the number of people that have access to low-cost, high-speed payments will only continue to grow, making the payments industry ripe for disruption. Even crypto-skeptical superpowers are taking note, as two U.S. senators introduced legislation this summer to make small crypto transactions tax-free. But the benefits of Lightning Network go beyond making payments low-cost and high-speed for the daily user on the go. Some companies are even exploring how they can take this tool of financial freedom and apply it to protecting freedom of speech. Protecting freedom of speech with Bitcoin. True decentralization and financial freedom cannot happen without freedom of speech, communication, and privacy. While the value of payments on the Lightning Network can be seen in its ability to extend access to low-cost, high-speed cryptocurrency transactions to more people, there is another important utility. Arcane Research's report found that about 50% of the activity came from peer-to-peer transactions, meaning half of the Lightning Network's activity came from quickly connecting individuals to each other. As companies are utilizing Lightning Network technology, some are exploring its use for highly secure and private video conferencing or direct messaging. Much has been written about how big tech can harvest the data of its users and sell it to the highest bidder, making this space also ripe for disruption. By offering viable alternative messaging apps, such as Strike, Sphinx, or BitRefill that are easy to use, fast, free, and private, true decentralization can be achieved. With wider utilization of the Lightning Network, questions surrounding Bitcoin's price viability and its scalability could be answered promptly. Additionally, as cryptocurrency builders are innovating and coming up with ways to further utilize this technology, the Lightning Network could very well be the solution to protecting not just financial freedom, but freedom of speech as well. With cryptocurrency on track to reach 1 billion users by 2030, the proliferation of the Lightning Network bears watching, as more countries and companies make use of its ability to quickly process data at a low cost to the consumer. All right, that concludes Paolo Arduino's short but excellent little guest post to Bitcoin Magazine, which also, disclaimer, opinions expressed are Paolo's, not Bitcoin Magazine's. Really quick, let's hit our sponsor for today, and then we will jump back in. I want to share a little bit of my thoughts on this piece.
CoinKite
is one of, if not the longest running Bitcoin security hardware maker in the space. They started at block 141,000. That is back in 2011. And they are literally the standard for security and reliability. They're famous for numerous amazing products, including the Cold Card, which they are now on MK4, Mark IV, for all of you prudes out there. They don't like that I say MK4, haha. But they have the Open Dimes. They have the Block Clock. They have the Tap Signers. Honestly, I've been thinking so much lately about what the Tap Signer enables. The ability to achieve the security, but the unbelievable ease of use that they can offer in combination. It's a really elegant trade-off. And I just watched a video from Nunchuck. The Nunchuck wallet, I'm sure you've heard of it. It's literally one of my favorite multi-sigs, if not my absolute favorite. But I watched this video yesterday where they demonstrated using the Cold Card and the Tap Signer together for their multi-sig. And I just can't, you have to see it work. You need to experience it to understand how slick this is. You literally just hold the Tap Signer up to the device whenever you want to sign a transaction. It is truly incredible. And if you would like to experience it, luckily you can get a discount on this and every one of CoinKite's amazing products using code BitcoinAudible and going to guyswan.com/coldcard. Link and details right there in the show notes for all to see. Let's jump back into the guy's take. All right. So the first thing I want to do is I actually really like how he started this out is just that the bear markets are full of FUD. They're full of people claiming everything has changed and it's all going to hell. And, you know, like I say, always, like, this is why it's so important to find the signal among the noise, because this is the noise of the bear market. And understand that the bear market sentiment is, in fact, a sentiment. It's a feeling. It's contagious and almost everyone falls for it. We've been here before so many times, it's ridiculous to, like, when you really stop and think about where the last bear markets were and how people talked and, you know, what people said about the culture and everything, like, it just, I don't know, it feels like I'm on a broken record and everybody's convinced that this time it's different and this time it's bad and this time, you know, Bitcoin culture has died and just blah, blah. It's amazing how much of a broken record it feels like sometime. And this is why I say focus on, I mean, I say the signal, but I focus on what is being developed, focus on what is being built, look at the tools, look at the ecosystem. I think, like, nothing looks bearish to me. Lightning Network is hitting all-time highs, hash rate is hitting all-time highs. Everybody talks about, like, nobody is, like, thinks seriously about Bitcoin anymore, and it's like, they're talking about the normal, the randos on Twitter. It's like, that's just Twitter. That is literally Twitter. I don't know of any devs or anybody realistically building projects who don't think exactly the way that they say cypherpunks are supposed to think. The people who don't think adversarially, who don't honestly assess and look at what is being built or the apps being worked on, are the ones that don't build anything of consequence. So why do you care about what the, like, the social sphere is always going to be the social sphere. The people who get the most attention are always going to be the most absurd or the most evangelist. Like, let it go. It doesn't matter. That's not, those aren't builders if they're not literally building. I don't know, the comparisons and it's a social phenomenon, right? And I think there's an element that's fascinating about it at the same time that it's, like, profoundly aggravating. but I don't know. I'm just getting wrapped up into some of the stupid crap people say on Twitter. So there's me falling for it, right? But this is why I think Bitcoin, people even who are in Bitcoin for, like, a long time fall victim to the same nonsense. You know, they start going all poo-poo on everything because that's, like I said, it's a sentiment. It's a feeling. Like, you just kind of get to this place where it feels rough. And to claim that the way you feel about it is the way it actually is essentially the path of least resistance. You almost always adopt the sentiment of your social group. Like mentality and feeling is a shared experience. So keep that in mind when you're trying to be self-reflective about where we are in Bitcoin and what's going on in the space. And just be aware that that's going to be the bias in the bear market. That's the way you're even going to want to lean yourself if you're paying attention, if you're getting wrapped up into everything that's happening on social media and the like. Anyway, that's just kind of a caveat here to explain why I think the FUD is where it is and to remind people where we are in these cycles and where we are in the market sentiment, that this should be totally expected. And that's why Bitcoin Audible is here, guys, obviously, because we're all Signal, baby. But luckily you're here and you listen to the show, so you know all about that. But I find it interesting that Paolo actually did not mention Keat in this when he was talking about the Sphinx and the these chat apps and actually using Lightning for data, when I think Keat and the Hole Punch Network, which is what we talked about in the episode where we had Paolo and Matthias on the show to talk about exactly this, is that decentralizing the infrastructure for communication, to remove essentially the platform from the center of everybody's discussions, is about being able to monetize the infrastructure, to fund the infrastructure in a decentralized way. It requires a new model for monetization. That, I think, is the ultimate solution. And Lightning is enabling us to test out all sorts of different ways to do exactly that. And the ability to provide microservices, because you have a financial, you have a technical solution to the financial payments problem, to the idea of being monetized. The fact that two things have led to the aggressive centralization and censorship of the internet model as is. The internet protocol itself is very decentralized. It is an incredibly strong piece of the entire puzzle here, and it has removed the center from the network infrastructure, but it has not removed the center from the communications, from the ability to connect with other users. We still had to build centralized services on top of that. So it's very much this concept that I talk about. I think it could be easily described as the two steps forward, one step back. We took two huge leaps forward with the infrastructure when it came to the internet and digital communication and packet switching and, you know, TCP/IP, these new models, these new protocols for actually establishing machines and establishing connections on the network that allowed us to make a persistent network with inconsistent servers and nodes and machines. Machines could go down, connections could go down, but the network remained the same. But we still had a peer discovery problem. We still had an indexing problem. We have all of these new problems built on top of this network that ended up becoming centralized because they were major services and issues to solve that needed a monetization, that needed a way to fund themselves. You had to make them sustainable. And what arose on the internet? Advertising. Everything had to be advertising. But that means you need a contract. That means you need to figure out how to count clicks. This means you need to figure out how to draw people's attention. Inevitably, the way to maintain the value necessary, maintain the flow of money necessary to keep those things alive, was to centralize it. There was no alternative mechanism for decentralizing the advertising model yet, and trying to build that would be way, way too hard at a time when there was such aggressive growth on the internet that you had to capture as many users as possible, as fast as possible, which meant centralization was inevitable. That was how we were going to migrate. It was going to be services built on a decentralized infrastructure that essentially re-centralized network connections. But in doing so, you implement a vulnerability. You implement a new centralization problem, obviously. Like I said, that's your one step back. And what's funny is that Jack Dorsey, there was actually I just saw this on Twitter. Somebody shared a transcript. It was texts back and forth between Elon Musk and Jack Dorsey about Twitter that's coming out in the Twitter trial, which is hilarious that all this stuff is like coming to surface because they're suing. First, they squealed and screamed about Elon Musk buying Twitter and how it was terrible and they weren't going to do it. And they tried to have an emergency board meeting and change the rules so that they could essentially inflate the supply of Twitter stock so that Elon wouldn't actually control it enough to go private. I mean, just all of this stuff, the hilarity of all of that. And then now they're in court trying to force him to buy Twitter. Man, that is some wonderful, wonderful drama of the 2020s. If you have not dug into that, it is hilarious. But I saved this little segment just because I thought Jack Dorsey had a really, really good point here. And I thought this was enlightening to see this in their private conversations that have essentially been exposed because of all of this. And I thought this is such a good example of what Lightning is trying to solve and what I think Lightning does solve and why it will enable the freedom of speech and it will get around censorship is because of the monetization model. Is that the idea of needing, oh, and I haven't even mentioned that even after you deal with the platform and network connections, you cannot have permissionless payments. You cannot have monetization that doesn't involve a platform, which means that no matter what you do, even if you somehow quote unquote decentralize the network, the social network, you still cannot make the model work if you require advertising as your center, because it requires a centralized payment processor. Payments are inherently centralized because they are whitelisted, because it's a permissioned walled garden. There isn't a decentralized payment protocol. It simply didn't exist before Bitcoin. The very existence of the dollar is a permissioned thing. It is only because, I mean, literally, the only institutions that have the ability to create money are banks, and they are explicitly required to have they have to go through this incredible licensing process, and they have to have these, you know, bonds and all this insurance and all the regulatory environment around it is insane. You would never, ever be able to, like, if fintech had to set up their own banks, fintech would never have happened. That's why they just used other banks. But because of that, they're just a closed, you know, a completely walled garden. The banks just do what they want and they charge what they want, and the payment processors do the same because it's trapped. There is no competition. The barrier to competition is so massive that even attempting something outside of that is practically impossible. And you still aren't competing with the dollar structure. You're just trying to participate in the walled garden. You're not able to leave the walled garden because the walled garden is its very existence. The existence of a dollar is based on the permission from the government, from the Federal Reserve, from the dollar system, for the very privilege of being an institution that can plug into it and have the right to move dollars. Like, that's it. Otherwise, it just doesn't exist. It's 100% an item of authority. And, I mean, that's why, you know, Russia just found out that, you know, they have billions and billions in reserves. No, they don't have any reserves because their reserves are in a dollar infrastructure. And they just poof out of existence. So I wanted to read a little bit of a tangent there, but I wanted to read the Elon Musk and Jack Dorsey Twitter thing. So Jack Dorsey says, yes, a new platform is needed. It can't be a company. That is why I left. And then he shares a link to a Elon Musk tweet, and Elon says, okay, what should it be like? Jack says, I believe it must be an open source protocol funded by a foundation of sorts that doesn't own the protocol, only advances it, a bit like what Signal has done. It can't have an advertising model. Otherwise, you have surface area that governments and advertisers will try to influence and control. If it has a centralized entity behind it, it will be attacked. This isn't complicated work. It just has to be done right so it's resilient to what has happened to Twitter. Elon, super interesting idea. Jack, I'm off the Twitter board mid-May and then completely out of the company. I intend to do this work and fix our mistakes. Twitter started as a protocol. It should have never been a company. That was the original sin. Elon, I'd like to help if I am able. Jack, I wanted to talk with you about it after I was all clear, because you care so much, get its importance, and could definitely help in immeasurable ways. Back when we had the activists come in, I tried my hardest to get you on our board, and our board said no. That's about the time I decided I needed to work to leave, as hard as it was for me. Elon, do you have a moment to talk? Jack, about to head out to dinner, but I can for a minute. So, I think the line that hit me in reading how he framed it, I thought was so good. This line was just really profound in the simplicity and truth of why the state of the internet is the state of the internet, why Facebook is the way it is, Twitter is the way it is, and why there is no fix in creating a quote-unquote free speech alternative social media. You actually need a different foundation in order to make it work, because no matter what you do, quote-unquote, it can't have an advertising model. Otherwise, you have a surface area that governments and advertisers will try to influence and control. If it has a centralized entity behind it, it will be attacked. And this is why I'm so excited about what Keat and Hole Punch and Synonym are doing, because they're essentially building the foundation of a way to connect and make network connections and groups and the discovery mechanism that is not centralized, that can be, and because of the implementation of Lightning, because of building Lightning into kind of the base structure and operating in the very beginnings of the use of this protocol, allows us to make it a microservice that can be provided by anybody. I really think the combination is going to steamroll in being able to offer up liquidity for Lightning, to be able to offer up, you know, server storage for things like the Hole Punch platform or Keat or anything like that, or for hosting rooms that want to be private and want to have a static, a persistent space in order to continually go back to. Like, I'm doing this for free right now with the Keat rooms that I am in by hosting it on my Linux machine, and it works. I mean, it's still an alpha product, so it's had some bugs here and there, but I spend as much time on Keat as I do on Telegram, and there's like, there's way, way, way less activity happening on Keat. I'm just fascinated by how it works and what it could mean if this thing actually explodes, and watching it develop and watching it slowly come into its own is exciting. And it's one of those things that has me as excited as the Lightning Network originally got me and Bitcoin originally got me. And one of the things is that this thing is not possible. It doesn't actually, it can't actually function the way I would perceive it could eventually function without the Lightning Network. It is specifically because of the open payment protocol and the ability to just kind of iterate and build on top of this and do microtransactions in general that actually makes Bitcoin scalable, that makes this exact sort of infrastructure possible, and the indexing and building out of, you know, contact, like kind of a, in a sense, like the Pirate Bay of torrents, right? Is that you could actually have quote unquote microservices where people just offer up an index of the discovery of all of your contacts and how to connect to them and all of this stuff, which this is a gross generalization. But it's essentially how BitTorrent runs, right? Is BitTorrent has something called a DHT. BitTorrent is the file sharing network. You probably should know about it if you've listened to the show at all, but just in case there are new people who don't know, BitTorrent is file sharing. So think of sharing movies and music and random files, just all that stuff online that's not on any of these platforms. This is done by connecting peers directly to each other across all of the problems with running servers and everything. And what Hole Punch is, well, Hole Punch is technically built on top of HyperCore, and HyperCore is really the protocol, but too much complexity. We're just going to call it Hole Punch for simplicity's sake. Hole Punch is essentially BitTorrent on steroids. It achieves the same ability to Hole Punch to punch through all of the network setup and port forwarding and firewalls and everything so that you can connect directly to peers, and it runs and it houses people nodes essentially with DHTs essentially manage the ability to discover all of those peers, and it's done in a decentralized fashion. Like, anybody can do it, almost like you can run a Bitcoin node and anybody can connect to you and request information off the blockchain. So it's why this thing is so difficult to shut down. It's why BitTorrent is so difficult to shut down. And Hole Punch essentially leverages that same thing, except that it can make it a web experience. Like, BitTorrent is really clunky. BitTorrent has a lot of moving parts, and you kind of have to know how to operate in BitTorrent. You'd have to know how to go to Pirate Bay and get a torrent, and is this what I'm looking for? Maybe, you know, some websites only aggregate for certain types of content and stuff that you're looking for. And then you got to get a BitTorrent downloader and client and all this stuff. Like, using it for generic file sharing is really, like there are a lot of people who do it. People release albums of their music and stuff. Like, it's not all just like illegal sharing, even though that's what it's known for. And that's the breadth, this is the majority of its traffic. It's also just a generic file sharing. It's just a generic data sharing platform, but it's super clunky from the context of user experience. Hole Punch essentially fixes that. And what you can build on top of that with these certain things is essentially create a web experience. You can use it as like static files and cloud storage and chat apps and social media protocols and payments. Like, all of these things can just be done in kind of a generic way, and you can use TCP/IP. You're essentially changing the platform to a peer-to-peer protocol. So instead of using Apple to find other Apple users, or using Twitter to find other Twitter users, and Telegram to find other Telegram users, you use Hole Punch to discover the entire set of peers. And then you simply connect to the people. Everybody runs their own quote-unquote identity, which is not an identity. It's just a public key. Just like on Bitcoin, is that I send transactions to your public key, and then that's your Bitcoin. I make a connection to your public key on Hole Punch, and all of our communications by default are encrypted. And it's not like that fake end-to-end encrypted like Telegram does or Signal does with your phone number, which inevitably is vulnerable because you just don't... It's just not possible to make a, at least in my opinion, it doesn't seem logically sound to build off of something that you kind of know is compromised as a means of creating a set of keys and establishing communication that you can say that, oh, we've made sure that multiple devices can't do this, blah, blah, blah. But that still seems like a service side thing, a security that's provided by the service, not a security that's provided by the protocol itself or the way that the communication is being done. That's why the only way is to figure out a way to have users manage public and private keys themselves, that they are generating it securely on their device, and leverage those keys for the communication, for connections, that sort of thing. And that is essentially what Hole Punch is able to do. And when I think Lightning and Bitcoin is essentially going to bring, and has, people forget like what an incredible breakthrough it is, how many people have a public-private key pair. With the existence of GPG and GPG tools and keys and stuff that have existed for God knows how long, I don't even know, you know, decades, that now, because of Bitcoin, because of the asset, because of the payment system, the idea of seed storage and having your own keys and having a hardware device that keeps that safe, and that millions of people have these things that are comparable, not comparable, better, that are superior and vastly cheaper and more secure than the, you know, deca-thousand-dollar hardware security modules used by corporate CEOs and government entities, that we have these as retail products for Bitcoin users, that we've normalized this. Do not forget what an unbelievable amount of progress that is in the way we think about security and the things that we can leverage to make things on top of that, to leverage a cold card or a Bitbox or a Trezor or some of these things, to actually use them as keys, to use them as public keys to communicate, to encrypt information to and from each other. And that's where I think one of the secrets of the benefit of this is going to lie, in having a Lightning Network wallet where you can actually branch your identity off of this with like slash tags and synonym, where you can just sub-create, just like you can create sub-public keys, you can create any sort of identities and, or identity, I hate the word identity because it implies the vulnerability, but it's an instance. It's like a username. You can create throwaway usernames. You can separate or prove the connection between certain things that you do online, or whether or not you want cookies or being traced with your metadata while you're traveling around online. You know, maybe there are times where I definitely want Amazon to know it's me when I go back to Amazon, like 90% of the time, because I want them to advertise stuff I've purchased or stuff that I might like. I have actually benefited from marketing that I know was targeted to my experience on the internet. And I notice those connections, but I also really specifically like it when I know I'm separated from that. And when I'm searching on a VPN from other countries, because Google gives me totally different results. It tells me an entirely different political narrative, and I can get a more realistic sense of what's happening in the world because it's not curated to me. It's not curated to what my biases already are or what the narrative of the political jurisdiction wants me to hear. And with the ability to decentralize the payment infrastructure, we have the capability to remove the platform from that discussion and make these exact same services microservices that can be provided by anybody in a network of peers. And you can actually take the BitTorrent structure, which worked so well when we were delivering media in an era when the media giants refused to admit that the internet has fundamentally changed their industry. And BitTorrent existed as a protest, right? Is that you're going to pretend the internet doesn't exist and you're going to try to charge physical content prices? Well, we're just going to get it for free because the internet does exist. Being able to use that same architecture and essentially make the exact same protest against censorship, that exact same protest against platform controls and government manipulation of narrative, now we can do that with money. Now we can do that with microservices. And it is going to be a monetization model that I think fundamentally changes how these things are provided. And that monetization model cannot exist without a new payments network that is decentralized, that is private, that is secure. And that is the Lightning Network. And I don't see any alternative that realistically is going to do that. You know, somebody was comparing the other day on Twitter, I saw this discussion about how people use stablecoins more than they use Lightning. And I'm like, stablecoins isn't a scalability. Stablecoins are nothing. Stablecoins are a fiat network using transactions that are just broadcast on chain. You know, like a stablecoin is a done product when you issue the token. That's it. You don't have to do anything. Lightning Network is a protocol. They're not even accomplishing the same task. Lightning is an entirely new protocol and a new means of making a transaction to begin with. It was always going to require years and years of development. I wish we were further along, but it's a very difficult problem to solve. And it's constantly amazing me about where we even are. Stablecoins have no job. They have zero, and some centralized entity just issues a token, and then it's on-chain transactions. Having a stablecoin on Bitcoin does not fix anything in the terms of its scalability or its use in peer-to-peer transactions. It just lets you use the dollar instead of Bitcoin. Anyway, that's a bit of a distraction, and it's an entire argument in and of itself. So I won't go any more into that. It is time to put Rad down, and it's gotten really late, so we're going to go ahead and close this one out here. I just thought this was I read this one, this just got me thinking about it, and I do think his thesis is correct. Like, the idea that the way that we get freedom of speech back, that we get censorship-resistant speech on the internet, is by removing the centers that have enabled control and censorship on the platforms and the means by which we connect ourselves. And I think the tools that are able to actually accomplish that task are explicitly only going to be able to do so in a sustainable way because of what Lightning enables in conjunction with those tools. So even though I've mentioned them 100 times, it feels like recently, I would say watch Keat, watch holepunch.io and keat.io, download it and test it. Feel free to DM me if you want to get in one of the groups where we're hanging out. And Synonym, watch Synonym and what John Carvalho is doing, Bitcoin Error Log on Twitter. Follow Paolo Arduino, the author of this article. Follow Matthias who I will, I'll also put the link to the previous episode, the chat where we had the lengthy discussion about this stuff. And I think we'll probably revisit this again, likely before the end of the year, because I feel like so much is going to drop in the next few months. And I'm really, really excited. I think, you know, people experience, we talked about this in a recent episode, actually. I can't remember which one it was. But people experience value directly. Most people cannot understand or cannot imagine, you know, first that, you know, you could have an environment that enables services and value to be created, but even more so, like going one step, one layer deeper, is the inability to understand a foundation that creates an environment that then allows services and products to be created. 99% of people simply understand the value of something when they have a product in their hand and it provides the value and the service exactly that they think. You know, nobody understood that very, very few people understood the implications of the internet and that something like the iPhone was possible. They weren't thinking about it at the beginning of the internet. When you held the iPhone in your hand, you knew things had really changed. And I think the rest of this year and next year are going to be incredible in the context of the things that actually happen and where we are in the Lightning Network to see some of these services and means of using this protocol and this ecosystem in a way that we've talked about for a really, really long time. And we can actually kind of beat on the actual products and services. We can actually play around with them. And I'm really, really excited about it. So that's why I keep bringing it up. And that's why I read this article. I thought it was interesting. So hope you guys enjoyed this episode. A huge thank you to our sponsors, to CoinKite, to the Fold Card, and to Swan Bitcoin. These guys have been major supporters of the show. They're listeners of the show. And they're literally the products that I use all the time, all the time. If you want to live the Bitcoin way, like a Guy Swan, check out these services. Check out the links and discounts available to you guys in the show notes. They are right there in the description. So check them out. Also, a huge thank you to the Audionauts. That room has become vastly more useful. I've been actually paying people a little bit over the Lightning Network for finding links and little stats and stuff for me that I just don't have the time to look up. You guys have actually been a godsend. Shout out to BTK. Shout out to SatStacker. Shout out to Sakka. a bunch of people up there have been a huge help. And I appreciate the Audionauts. They've been supporters forever. And you were there supporting my work before anyone else. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And with that, don't forget to subscribe. We'll have another episode tomorrow of Bitcoin Audible. And until next time, everybody. Take it easy, guys.
You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.